on the program this afternoon is T. Toth Fehail.
Yes.
And he's going to tell us about indirectly replicating nanomachines, a kinematic cellular automata, right, approach. So T. Is a senior associate of the Foresight Institute. He's also an employee at General Dynamics Advanced Intelligent Systems. He got his master's degree at Notre Dame and been involved in lots of activities. And it looks like you got everything set up.
Yep. Maybe this is a little too close.
Thank you. This is work that I just finished for NIAC, the NASA's Institute for Advanced Concepts, with the help of Robert Freitas here and Matt Moses. For those of you that don't know, Robert Freitas just finished a book called Kinematic Self-Replicating Machines. It should be available today. And Matt Moses is one of the few people who has actually built a self-replicating machine. Since we don't have much time, we're going to kind of burn through this. It's pretty obvious why replication is important. It's a very powerful, disruptive, and powerful manufacturing process, especially at the nanoscale. It's going to get us massive reduction in cost per pound. And it'll give us large quantities, which we don't really get from the integrated circuit industry. Now, the advantage of having the thing is there are different types of replication. In direct replication, you have, say you have one biological cell that makes a copy of itself. With indirect replication, it's like you have a factory that builds machines and they assemble machines together in the form of another factory. That's indirect indirect replication. It's easier to implement and it's easier to control. Now, self-assembly was mentioned quite a bit today, and there are some problems with it. The biggest problem is that it doesn't use the GRP, the genotype, ribotype, phenotype paradigm. And there's no really good theory for trying to figure out if you have some product you have in mind, there's no good theory for describing how you get there given a certain level of input parts. And it goes against the principles of sound design because if you change one little thing in a self-assembled process, you probably have to change a process and you may get something completely different as your end product. However, for simple devices, I mean, in chemistry, that's all we do is self-assembly. So for at a nanoscale, self-assembly is very good for getting the simple input parts, and that's what we decided to do in this design project. Now, kinematic cellular automata. For those of you who have read John von Neumann's work, he basically had two designs for self-replication. The first one was a simple robot, a micro-scale robot, that would be in a warehouse of parts that made up that same robot. It would go around, pick up parts, and put them together. And at the end, it would program that copy, and then you have two self-replicating robots. Unfortunately, while this design is very intuitive, it's not mathematically very rigorous, and what John von Neumann came up with is the idea of cellular automata, which, as you saw from the earlier descriptions today, a cellular automata is very useful because it's mathematically very rigorous, and von Neumann actually was able to prove that machine self-replication could work, though it is relatively complicated. Now, one of the things we decided in discovered in our study is that we want a replicating system to be hierarchical, and we want it to be Turing equivalent, unlike some self-assembling systems. It's indirect replication, just like in regular software engineering. If you run into a really hard problem, usually an extra level of indirection helps solve it. KCAs have decreased complexity. You have a larger work envelope than a single cell, and you have more capabilities than, say, a disconnected modular robots like Smart Dust. KCAs are more like smart blobs where everything is more closely integrated, even though the individual cells are not going to be as smart as the individual modules in Smart Dust. The other advantage of KCA is that you can operate both at a macro and nano scale. Now, there are a few efforts all over the world in doing modular robotics, and there are possibly some commercial possibilities, though reliability is a problem. And I'm sure we're going to have the same kind of problems at the nano scale. But the nanoscale is where you can get the really simple input parts and you can really reduce the cost. This will give you an idea of how much you can reduce the cost. What we see here, obviously, is you have very simple manufactured objects like wrenches, cars. Digital watches start getting more complicated per pound. And then way at the end, you have Eigler's IBM ad. These are all built, hand-built. And as you can see, something like what Eigler built, even if you pay the researchers minimum wage, because it takes about an hour to move seven atoms, it's a very expensive piece of machinery, not even machinery. Unlike in the replication world, in the natural world, we have things like salt and yogurt and potatoes. Because it self-assembles, it's much, much cheaper. And that is because the input parts are very simple. In the case of potatoes, you're talking about dirt and sunshine. In terms of KCA replicating systems, you're talking about pure feedstock, which costs about $100 a pound. Now, so when you think about using some sort of kinematic solid or automata, what you're really talking about is programmable materials. And the advantage of programmable materials, you actually can do three distinct things that you can't do with regular machines. One of them is what is known as flow mode. And this is pretty simple. You get the idea of each particular machine has only each particular cell, which in this case has different colors, so it's easy to see what it's doing. Every single cell has very few modes of freedom. But when you have a lot of cells, you can do a lot of complicated things. In this particular case, it floats against the wall. Now, once you flow against the wall, or in this particular case, you've bought your a box of cells from ABC warehouse. Then it flows against the wall, and then you turn it on, and you can show the sponsor. So you have a pixelated mode, also. And then last of all, you can have a logic processing mode, which we do today in the form of field programmable arrays. And then, of course, you've got applications. NIAC funds interesting ideas, force-based applications, of course. And it's not really interested in technologies as it is in the systems and architectures. And so that's basically what we're trying to do. But KCAs will work in any sort of application where you need hyperflexibility. We had some particular goals. This was a fairly small project. We're trying to characterize the unexplored area of self-replication. When I first started this project, there had only been two people that had built self-replicating systems. Matt Moses built an interesting system as part of his master's thesis. It was all manually controlled. Greg Trichinek at Johns Hopkins had built something out of Legos. Basically, he used the slave labor of his undergrads. It was very constrained in what he could do, but they both proved that we weren't just waving our hands. But the thing is, no one had actually tried to characterize that space. We wanted to find out, well, how difficult is it to build a real, autonomous, working KCA that was useful? We had a few approaches that we wanted to figure out if they were correct or not. We actually tried to design a working KCA, and then we wanted to simulate some of those to prove the design. You may have seen this picture. This is actually out of date now. I think we're up to 137 dimensions. This turns out to be a very useful tool for trying to understand how a particular system will replicate or not. There's a whole bunch of dimensions that force you to think about your design in ways that you can't do just by yourself. What we ended up doing is we ended up to quantify after we came up with this design. This really should be at the end of the talk. But the result was that an indirectly replicating system is less complicated than a Pentium in terms of the number of parts and the number of interactions needed to build those and assemble those parts. Here's a hierarchy we came up with, and we cheated because we really don't know what we're doing when we're building self-replicating systems, so we stole everything from biology and from computer science. The most important thing is you want your system to be useful. And that's probably one of the greatest criticisms I've had of Greg Trichin is doing at Johns Hopkins, is that his self-replicating systems are not really useful. You want it to be useful, and you want it to be useful without having it replicate. Now, this the idea of having subsystems is important, and here this comes out of von Neumann's architecture for building a computer. You have, for a computer, you have memory and arithmetic logic unit and a controller, and here we have transporters, connectors, and controllers. And a cell is the basic unit of a connect cell later automata. Cells are symmetric, so you have facets, and these facets are made out of parts, which should be inert and simpler than at the higher levels. And, of course, everything comes down at the bottom to molecules. So this is the essential problem of replication. You have a well-ordered, in a well-ordered environment, you have simple parts, you have symmetric facets, you have modular cells, you have different subsystems, transporter, connector, and controller, which all form an indirectly replicating system. Now, here's a rendition of a transporter subsystem. You can see these individual cells. They're all colored in different shades so you can see what's happening. The pink part right here is actually a part. And so what a transporter does is it takes one part and moves it from one place to another. Now, a connector takes different types of parts and preparation tools to prepare those parts and basically brings them together. So in a sense, a connector is a specialized group of transporters. And then you have the controller subsystem. This is actually one of the more complicated parts, but it turns out that this is actually a solved problem. We have field programmable arrays that take fairly simple electronic systems, control logic blocks, puts a whole bunch of them together, and voila, you have a computer that controls the entire process. Here's a unit cell. As you can see, it's fairly simple. We have different styles of tabs and actuators and sensors with which the different cells can interact with each other. And then, you have your facet, which basically this is how you do your mechanical interactions. The checkerboard squares you have on the top over here are LEDs and optical transistors, so you have communication between cells. Now, the parts, you have different types of parts here. At the bottom here, you have different types of actuators that use ionic polymer metal composites to actually move things around in particularly well-defined ways. You can actually build, using very inert parts, conductors and insulators, to build... to put together a solenoid. And then, of course, you need structural units to hold everything together in place. One of the interesting things we came up with was the idea of, okay, how do you take something like a transistor, take a simple part. In this particular case, you have just a wire encapsulated in something called a Wang tile. Or you can put a transistor, an FET transistor made out of a bucky tubes, and encapsulate it in such a way that you can put smart glue, which was referred to earlier today. You put this smart glue on the edge, and it's supposed to, we put them in a box, and you mix up the box, and all of a sudden you have a NAND gate at the end. Now, we were kind of uncomfortable with that. We wanted to find, all right, is this true? How difficult is it? After the project was over, one of the other NIAC fellows who got phase two funding for doing nanomachines, and I should add that this is one of the things that the government is actually funding, the Drexlerian view of nanotechnology, he helped me build one of these Wang tiles that's containing of about 5,000 atoms. But the thing is, symbolically, we've got a conductor here, we've got a transistor here, and then we've got different types of smart glue. How many do you need? Turns out you only need about 11 different types of Wang tiles with about 50 different types of smart glue, and you can build either an AND gate or an op-amp, which is a really useful thing to have when you're building electronics. And you only need about 200 of these NAND gates to build a control block for a field programmable array. So here's a simulation of a transporter and connector. Here you see on this side, you see the one part over here, and then right off the screen here you have another corner piece. And what this system is going to do, if the simulation works, where's my arrow? There we are. Is basically you grab things from a conveyor belt, and the light blue preparation tool comes and prepares the yellow part, and then you put it together. That was one assembly step. You have to do about 400 more. Now, At a nanoscale level, that preparation tool may do other things. It may scrape off a layer of the hydrogenated hydrogen atoms, or may do other sort of chemical processes. And so I guess that's about it. We have some future directions that we'd like to go to in terms of possibly implementing this at a macro scale, or we may go straight to the nanoscale, because that is what NIAC seems to be interested in for our next funding cycle. Thank you very much.
We have time for discussion, suggestions, comments.
Chris?
You left out the punchline about the relative complexity between this and a modern CPU.
I thought I had that at the beginning. Where was it? It got. I must have skimmed by it really fast. Yeah, here, this one. Yeah, because, okay, as I pointed out toward the end, there were about, it takes about, about 50 Wang tiles to put together a NAND gate. So that's 5,000 atoms there for each Wang gate, or Wang tile. Then you need about 50 to 100 NAND gates to put together a logic solid block, a logic control block. You need about 200 or 400 of them to put together a computer, which will control the whole process. So basically, by the time you're done, you got about almost 10 million parts, which is less than what a Pentium has. Thank you for reminding me. Anyone else?
I'm curious about the...
Stand up. Oh, there you are. Okay.
Did you actually build the NAND gate? And if so, how much smaller is it than current technology?
It's not too much smaller, as you can see. I mean, 5,000 atoms is a lot, and I'm sure we can get smaller than that. What we were trying to just demonstrate is that the smart glue concept worked. We didn't actually build anything in hardware, no. Otherwise, I would have shown you pictures of that.
Did you have to let it run?
No, okay, no, because the thing is that there are more complicated issues involved, as anyone who's actually tried it has actually tried to put together FET transistors, is there's connection problems, and I just basically said, I just want to find out if smart glue works, and it does, in terms of self-organization, which was like a big hand-waving that I saw a lot of people doing, that if you have a transistor, you automatically have a circuit. It doesn't work that way, and that's what I wanted to show. And it does seem possible.
Oh, yes.
Did you propose to synthesize your building blocks chemically, or how are they going to be built?
Well, this was the interesting thing, is because they can be built a number of different ways. And that's one of the things I wanted to leave up, because, okay, as you know, there's a big debate going on in terms of, okay, do you build this... Is nanotechnology an inherently chemical process, or are we going to use mechanical synthesis? We know what's the correct answer, but in case somebody doesn't, we can say it doesn't matter. We can build useful systems very inexpensively that self-replicate indirectly, and they're useful and they're controllable. And so what we're trying to do is say it doesn't matter who's right, we can still do it.
I would just comment that it seems like a lot still hinges on that first step, and that seems to be the...
Well, there's a lot of people working on that step, though, and I think it's going to happen. I mean, we said, okay, here's the goal. You get to this point, we'll take it the rest of the way. So,
all right,
yes.
Let's thank you.
Thank you.